I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Takes a shot, runs into the box, shot,
score! It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. We talk soccer all over Georgia, the Southeast, the United States, the Western Hemisphere, the planet. That's what we do. It's AST each and every Tuesday. Tonight's show, we got some layers to this one. We're going to talk Atlanta United. We're going to get you ready for the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup tomorrow. You'll be able to listen to that match here on the station. Pre-game coverage starting at 6:30 from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Chattanooga FC hosting Atlanta United. Kickoff just after 7:30 tomorrow. That's some local urgency. Globally, huge day around the planet. Atletico Madrid and PSG are into the Champions League semifinals. Tomorrow, Real Madrid need a comeback in Germany at Bayern. You've also got news around Major League Soccer. Javier Mascherano has resigned at Inter Miami 4 months after winning an MLS Cup. And Matt Crocker walked out on the U.S. Soccer Federation 59 days before a home World Cup. We got a lot of stuff to get to. Maybe the word of the day is accountability. What happens when that gap between what a team or an organization promised and what they've been able to deliver doesn't exactly match up? All right, let's talk Atlanta United. And yeah, that's part of this conversation. Five Stripes come back from Chicago after a 1-0 loss. They are 1-5-1 in all competitions in 2026. They will be playing in their second competition tomorrow in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. They have less than 24 hours before they have to play in that one. Let's talk about what went wrong on Saturday. Let's talk about the road record. And let's talk about what Atlanta United's walking into tomorrow night. So, with this loss in Chicago, we know what went wrong. We know what has been going wrong. Some different things have been going wrong. But this game tomorrow, yeah, Chattanooga is an MLS Next Pro side. That would put them in the third division in the United States. You still have to treat this team with respect. It's going to be a huge crowd at Finley Stadium tomorrow night. They are going to be very pro the boys in blue. And everything that Chattanooga does well is going to create momentum. This is not an easy situation for Atlanta United to walk into. So you're coming into this after the loss in Chicago. The goal, 1-0, fire win. Marin Haile Selassie scores it in the 13th minute. Philip Zinckernagel with the cross. Jonathan Bamba with a touch. And Haile Selassie with the goal. Fourth clean sheet of the season for Chicago. Chris Brady made four saves, a couple of big ones. Atlanta had the control of the match. They had 55% of the ball. Chicago did create more big chances, 4-2 Atlanta's one. But Atlanta had the control. I think they were the better team overall on the night. Now, that big chances number is arguable in this conversation. But you had chances. Tomas Jacob hit the outside of the post minutes after the goal. You had a big header from Steon Gregerson get saved by, not by Brady. That one, in AME High, had a header saved by Brady. That was a good save. But Imbohazi, the center back, South African center back for Chicago, who had a huge night, he saved one off the line on the Gregerson header. Now, Imbohazi was involved in a tackle in the 78th minute on Sabo Lobjanidze. He is questionable for Wednesday at this stage. Not looking likely based off the fact that he could not put any weight on that foot leaving the field. Now, he was able to, by the time we got home at about 3 a.m. on Saturday night, Sunday morning, but not much. I'd be very shocked if Sabo Lobjanidze was available for this one. Alexei Maranchuk, he did not play, muscle tightness. He is available, and he is not listed on the injury report for tomorrow. Tata Martino had a one-match suspension. He is back. This wouldn't even apply anyway because this is a different competition tomorrow night. He'll be back on Saturday on the touchline as Atlanta hosts Nashville, which is another thing to consider when we talk about tomorrow against Chattanooga. It's a quick turn, and then it's a quick turn in the midweek next week as New England comes to town, and then it's a quick turn to a trip to Toronto after that. And if Atlanta wins tomorrow, it's a quick turn to another Open Cup match somewhere in the Charlotte metropolitan area. We'll get to that later. 6 straight regular season road losses for Atlanta United. Last road win was in Nashville late last season. 1-14-5 in their last 20 on the road, Atlanta United. They've also never won in Soldier Field. They have won in Chicago. That was in 2018. They have not won in Soldier Field, 0-5-3. Miguel Almirón made his 100th MLS regular season appearance on Saturday. One nice element to this game. So tomorrow, you can listen to the match here on 92.9 The Game. Again, pregame coverage will start with Abe Gordon and Madison Cruz at 6:30. Mike Conte and I will have you at just after 7:30. Chattanooga, they're 3-2-1 in MLS Next Pro. They're 5th in the Eastern Conference. They are unbeaten in 5 straight across all competitions. That includes 2 wins in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, 1 against a local team from UPSL Georgia, Kalonji Pro Profile, the other one against a team that has been one of the regional powerhouses in the Southeast, Tennessee Tempo out of the Nashville area. For old school Atlanta soccer sickos, Kwajo Poku played in that match. He is part of the Tennessee Tempo roster in his early 30s. Poku played for the Atlanta Silverbacks, played for the Georgia Revolution, played in MLS for NYCFC. Richard Dixon is the interim head coach for Chattanooga. He was a player for Chattanooga last time these teams met in the Open Cup, the only time these teams have met in the Open Cup, April 20th of 2022, a 6-0 win for Atlanta in Kennesaw at Fifth Third Stadium. The furthest that Chattanooga's ever advanced in the Open Cup is the third round, when Wednesday would be an all-time club milestone here. This is the first time in Chattanooga history that they've hosted an MLS side in a competitive match as well. Another subplot to this one is Ashton Gordon, wears number 19 for Chattanooga FC. He is on loan from Atlanta United, literally turned 19 years old today. Born in 2007, making me feel very old, Ashton. He's been very good in the Open Cup. SofaScore has him rated at just under 8 out of 10. He has started in the Open Cup for Atlanta United. He played as a 10 in Charleston against the Battery last time he was in the Open Cup. Very interesting night in Charleston because Ashton, I remember him getting on the bus, and Gonzalo Pineda was the manager at that time. And I asked Gonzalo, I was like, has Ashton ever played as a 10? And he asked Ashton if he ever played as a 10. He was like, yeah, once in an academy or something like that. It happens sometimes. And that was an Atlanta team with a bunch of injuries, had to deal with it. Ashton was a big part of helping that one out. He's been a big part for Chattanooga FC. Some limited minutes for CFC this year, but he's been very effective in all competitions. Now, Chattanooga's goalkeeper is Eldon Jakupovic. He's 41 years old. He's won the FA Cup with Leicester City. He has played in the UEFA Champions League. He was very good, standing on his head good against Atlanta United 2 late last season in that crazy game that got stopped in Kennesaw and had to get finished at the training ground a week later. I think it was about 20 minutes to play in that game, if I remember correctly. And he was unbelievable that day and won that match. And ended up keeping Atlanta United 2 out of the postseason last year in MLS Next Pro. Alex McGrath has been the danger man for Chattanooga. He's got 4 goals and assists. His average rating, again, from SofaScore has been just under 7.7. his goals, he's just very savvy. This is a veteran player, McGrath, who is very savvy in making that late run into the penalty area from his midfield role. I mean, think Frank Lampard in his Chelsea heyday, the late, well-timed runs getting into dangerous spots. Damian Barker-John, he had the big day on Saturday as Chattanooga beat Orlando City B, scored twice, likes to cut inside from the wing. Richard Dixon, the interim manager, said it's almost impossible to defend him when he's going at speed. So that's going to be an issue for Atlanta dealing with his pace. The winner of this one will advance to the round of 16. This is the round of 32. That game will be played April 28th or 29th, and it will be against the winner of Charlotte FC or the Charlotte Independents. And it will be on the road. The winner of that will host it. So when you go back to the Chicago game to kind of put a bow on this segment, it wasn't a blowout. Atlanta had more of the ball. I think they were the better team. You could even argue this was one of their better performances of the year. I think it was right there with the Philadelphia game, to be honest, in terms of overall control and what they created out of it. You wanted a little more danger, and you wanted to deal with a moment that took 6 seconds is when they got caught. It was a 1-2 on the right side for Chicago against Atlanta's left side. And AMI High, I mean, nailed it after speaking to the media yesterday. He was asked about communication, and I went back and clocked it. It was 6 seconds. It's not one guy forgetting to yell. It's a team not reading the danger fast enough in that moment, and they needed to be instinctive, and they were not. Now, the pattern of Atlanta on the road is an issue. Again, 1-14-5 in their last 20. That's not just a stretch of bad luck. This is something that has to change, I don't know, mentality-wise, behavioral-wise, and you're going to get an opportunity against a lower division opponent tomorrow. It does feel like an opportunity, and I wonder if Tata Martino takes this opportunity and does look at playing a lot of first-choice players to try to build some momentum for this group. Now, we talked about the injuries. Again, Saba Lobjanidze hit in a tackle. X-rays were negative, so that's a good sign. But is he going to be able to turn around and go on Wednesday? I would say doubtful. Latte Lott, a gash in his leg that needed stitches. Is he going to be able to turn around and go? Questionable. Stian Gregersen, wisdom teeth being removed, questionable. Steven Alzate, groin injury, questionable. Alexi Maranchuk, again, not on the injury list for tomorrow. He did miss the game in Chicago, muscle tightness once he arrived in Chicago. This is a really interesting day ahead for Atlanta United. I love the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. I love cup competitions in general. They create chaos. We saw an upset earlier today with Louisville City beating Austin at home. And like I said, this is going to be a big, big crowd for Chattanooga. I don't know what the final number is going to be. I'm actually fascinated about it. You go back to 2017 when these teams met in Atlanta United's first ever real-ish kind of game. It was a preseason game. It didn't count for anything. They had over 12,000 at Finley Stadium that day. Are you going to get to that kind of a number tomorrow? Again, this is the first time Chattanooga has hosted an MLS team in official competition, a game that counts, a game that is in the round of 32 of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Cannot wait for it tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit more about Atlanta United and Chattanooga later in the show. But coming up next, let's go to Europe, the UEFA Champions League. We'll talk about what happened today. We'll talk about what's going to happen, at least in my opinion, tomorrow. Going to have the semifinals nailed down by the end of the day tomorrow. We'll talk about all of that on the other side of the break on Atlanta Soccer tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. Got a lot of games going on right now as we talk. The U.S. Women's National Team trailing 1-0 at halftime to Japan. Got a win over the weekend. This is a three-game friendly series, a really good test for Emma Hayes' side. about to have kickoff in Mexico City at the Estadio Azteca. It's now the Estadio Banorte, but it'll always be the Estadio Azteca. Club America against Nashville SC in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. Scoreless coming into this. This is the second leg of the quarterfinals. I can't say I ever would have imagined Nashville in Mexico City at Club America, but it's about to happen. There's a whole lot of yellow involved in this match. We'll keep you updated on that as we go. That's about to kick off. You can watch it on FS1. You can watch it on 2 Day NA if you are so inclined. But keep me on, and we'll talk about some other stuff as we go. Right now, we're going to go to Europe. We're going to talk about the UEFA Champions League. Atletico Madrid and PSG, they booked their semifinal spots today. And it was just one of those days, at least in one of the games, that gave you all of the promises that you hope to get from the Champions League. You had some chaos. You had some clinical authority. You had, I think, what could end up being a pretty epic farewell season for a player coming to Major League Soccer in the summer. And two huge games tomorrow. So let's start in Madrid at the Metropolitano. Atletico Madrid, they lost 2-1 to Barcelona on the night, but they advanced 3-2 on aggregate. And this game was chaotic from the jump. Lamine Yamal scored in the 4th minute off a Clement Lenglet error. Ferran Torres made it 2-0 on aggregate, or 2-0 in the match, 2-2 on aggregate in the 24th minute. Everybody's wondering how Atleti's going to respond. Well, they responded really fast. Ademola Lookman with a great finish that gave Atleti the 2-1 deficit on the day, but a 3-2 aggregate lead. Marcos Llorente with the assist. Barcelona had chances. They were battling. You saw a really painful collision. It was an incredible save by Musso, the goalkeeper for Atleti, who was brilliant on the day. 7 saves in total, 5 from inside the 18, Juan Musso. And he makes a great save on the diving Fermin Lopez on a header. But as Lopez is falling through, he's laying out for the header. And as he's coming down, Musso went full like Spider-Man to block the shot. It goes out for a corner, but as Lopez is falling down, his face collides with the bottom of Musso's boot. Musso did not kick him. Lopez dives into Musso's foot as they're in the air, and one, some of the photographs of this are unbelievable. Two, I'm shocked it wasn't worse injury-wise. He had to be wrapped up and they stopped the bleeding, and I don't know if he's going to have any broken bones or not in his face, but he continued to play, subbed out in the second half. Crazy moment. You had more blood in a later incident with an elbow that was wayward. You had two different players bleed in this game. You had complaints coming into it about the grass being too tall. You had a red card to Barcelona's Eric Garcia for a denial of an obvious goal scoring opportunity, tripping up Alexander Sorloth. All kinds, like everything you could imagine in this match. It went deep into stoppage time. You had chances for Barcelona late. Araujo had a great header very, very late in it that he put over the bar. Atleti, under Diego Simeone, they go to the semifinals for the first time since 2017. They will face the winner of Arsenal and Sporting. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Liverpool didn't really put up much of a fight against PSG. PSG have taken the mantle once again of being the best team in Europe. They won 4-0 on aggregate, 2-0 on the night at Anfield. Ousmane Dembele scored twice, 72nd minute, and again in stoppage time. Liverpool, in a game that they were trailing, or a series they were trailing 2-0 coming into it, they only managed 26% of the possession, 0 shots on target. And Hugo Ekitike stretchered off with a non-contact injury in the 31st minute. That's an issue for Liverpool. Also a concern for France ahead of the World Cup. PSG will play the winner of that Bayern-Real Madrid quarterfinal. So tomorrow, Arsenal hosting Sporting in London. The Gunners have a 1-0 lead. Kai Havertz scored very, very late in that first leg in Lisbon. But Arsenal are not exactly steady right now. talk about them and what they're going through in a bit. Bayern, they host Real Madrid. Bayern leads 2-1. The goal from Kylian Mbappe in the 74th minute could end up being very important. Luis Diaz scored in the 41st of that first leg. Harry Kane scored in the first minute of the second half. But that goal from Mbappe gives Madrid a lifeline. So kind of to put a bow on things at the Metropolitano, I think it's just one of those things where Diego Simeone, I do not prefer his style of football. It is defensive. It is at times negative. It is combative. He doesn't want the ball. It's not dictated about wanting the ball. And we've talked about this many times over the years. I enjoy teams that want the ball and want to control games and dictate games with the ball. That's not how Cholo feels about things. That's not what he's into. Guillaume Balaguer, the great Spanish journalist, had a nice reminder of Pep Guardiola as he was starting to figure out what he was going to do before his coaching journey really got deep into it. And he had a chance to see a Diego Simeone training session. And he was like, it's really good. It's not for me. That's okay. I have so much respect for Simeone, even if I don't like his style of play. I prefer the Barcelona style of play. But what he is doing with Atleti, and really what he's done since he's been at Atleti, is so impressive because they do not have the money, the cachet of the Barcelonas, of the Real Madrids. But they have been about as competitive as you could realistically ask them to be, and maybe more competitive than they should be. Full credit to El Cholo, Diego Simeone. The other element for Atleti that's really interesting here is Antoine Griezmann. So this is his last season with the club. He is coming to Orlando City in the summer. He was going to leave in March. But I remember telling you guys this on this show. When those rumors started getting big, I'm like, Atleti's got a chance to win some trophies this year. They've got Copa del Rey with Barcelona. They've got Champions League. I don't know if he's going to want to leave before that's done. And they weren't done. So he stayed. He's coming in the summer. But this is an opportunity for Atleti to send him off with a storybook kind of ending. They're in the semifinals of the Champions League for the first time in a while. And you look at it, they're going to play the winner of Arsenal and Sporting. Arsenal is not confident at the moment. They are still battling to make sure that they win the Premier League. They've got a huge game coming up this weekend. I think they'll get past Sporting tomorrow, but it's not going to be easy. If they have to face Atleti and what Simeone and Atleti does to people, I'm not sure that Arsenal is going to be the team I would pick in that. I think they're the better team, but I don't know if they're the better team right now. That's going to be an issue in that series. It really will be. On the flip side, the other game today, PSG. Luis Enrique has risen back to the mantle of the best manager in the world right now. I think it's natural that PSG had some blips, had some ups and downs this season, because it's so hard when you win everything to do it again the next year. Now, I was watching, and maybe it's because we were going to Chicago, I was watching The Last Dance on our flights to Chicago and back. Reminded of just how hard it was for those Chicago Bulls teams to do two separate three-peats. Here's the thing about this game that I think makes it even more difficult when we talk about somebody like a PSG. Now, last year they weren't as tested in Ligue 1, the French league. This year they've been much more tested. Maybe again because they haven't been at their best, because they've been a little worn out physically and emotionally. All right, the Bulls had to have a good regular season, get positioned right for the playoffs, and then be right for the playoffs. That was it. PSG last year had to win the French League. They won the French Cup. They went on to win the Champions League, which is a whole nother set of complications and challenges. And they had a great second half to last season to do that. I think the calendar year of 2025, at least the first half of it, PSG was by far the best team in the world. Then they went into the Club World Cup over the summer, and it got all the way to the final. And I think you saw maybe the fumes that they were on at that point in that final where Chelsea beat them and beat them kind of at their own game. They didn't really get an offseason. They had a couple weeks, and they come into their short preseason and then start the French League. And they've been up and down. They've had moments where they haven't looked great. They've had a lot of injuries as well. But this series against Liverpool, they were clinical. They were dominant. They didn't really give Liverpool much of a chance to even feel like they were in the match. I mean, again, today, you're at Anfield. Liverpool's desperate. You keep 74% of the ball and you give up no shots on target. I mean, no chance. No chance. So PSG, I've said it most of the season, I think. I've thought Arsenal was the best team in the world, in Europe. I think they've lost that a little bit here late, where the pressure maybe is getting to them. They've been bounced out of the FA Cup. They've been bounced out of the League Cup. They still have Champions League. They still have the Premier League, but they lost in the Premier League over the weekend, and now they have Manchester City, who is breathing down their neck. They are playing them this weekend, and everything is on the line. So I'm really curious to see how Arsenal handle that tomorrow, because they will be thinking about Manchester City, even if they don't want to. They will be. They only have a 1-0 lead. I think the crowd will be anxious, and that can transmit to the players on the field. Will they be anxious? I'm curious. The game I'll be watching, because I think for the neutral it will be the better game, is Real Madrid chasing it in Munich, down 2-1. Such a great attack. Such a defense. There could be a lot of goals in that game. I'm thinking there could be 5, 6, 7 goals in that match. It should be very, very entertaining. Madrid need the chaos. Arsenal need to avoid chaos. They need a PSG-like performance. Keep the ball, keep sporting with no hope. Two completely different kinds of games. So we know Atleti and PSG are through. Tomorrow we'll find out who joins them. Real Madrid, they've done this before. You cannot count them out in this. I think Bayern will take it, though, but they're going to have to sweat for it. And I think Arsenal will take it. This needs to be a big moment for them to kind of reclaim a little bit of momentum going into a huge Premier League matchup this weekend. We'll see if the Gunners under Mikel Arteta can get that done. So coming up after the break, we go from Champions League chaos to a different kind of chaos entirely. John Texter and Eagle Football, they continue to unravel. Atlanta United is actually related to all of this. We will talk about where the story continues to move and where it stands right now on the other side of the break on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
When it comes to the world of soccer, we've got you covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore, and we're going to get into an old friend of Atlanta Soccer Tonight, somebody that we have talked about, haven't talked to. I don't know if I'd want to have that conversation. Somebody we've talked about quite a bit, maybe more than we would like to at times. But John Texter, if you have not heard about the John Texter shenanigans, first off, ask Noelle White, because she is always asking me every time I come in for the intersection. She's asking, What's the latest with our guy? Because the story's crazy. Like, the way all of this has went down is just crazy. And I think for non-soccer folks who get used to trades and drafts and the usual way that rosters are built, whether we're talking the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NHL, now college sports, I feel like we're going to start having trades here soon. You have these rosters being built and you make a trade and everybody lives up to both ends of the deal. I think it's extremely rare that something crazy happens. You know, a player's injured and they didn't disclose it, stuff like that. Well, the world of soccer is just a little bit different. You have the transfer market and you have teams that will pay transfer fees to basically buy a player's contract and bring them onto their roster. So Atlanta United had a deal with a John Textor-owned club. Well, it's a little more complicated than that, but we'll leave it there for right now. Botafogo in Brazil. That was for Thiago Almada in the summer of 2024. Long time ago, almost 2 years now, that deal was done. Well, it wasn't ever paid. You know, I think the deal, which is becoming more and more common now, is to spread transfer fees over a number of payments. Well, they didn't make any of them. So eventually, Atlanta United sent the case to FIFA. FIFA ended up, after appeals and all kinds of other shenanigans from John Textor and his ownership group, FIFA put a transfer ban on Botafogo. Well, to get out of that, John Textor reportedly had to borrow more money. And he did. And he made a new agreement with Atlanta United for the transfer fee plus the penalties plus, I think, late fees. Interest might have been included. Who knows? A lot of extra stuff. And in that agreement, money, it did change hands, but then it was spread out over a number of payments. And according to a lot of different reports from a lot of different countries, the second payment hasn't ever happened. Well, that's the least of John Textor's issues right now. And that's a big one, because Botafogo might go under another transfer ban. The bigger issue is John Textor might not own anything very, very soon. Eagle Football Holdings, which is the company that he started, they entered administration on March 27th, similar to bankruptcy liquidation. Okay, so Eagle Football Group was the parent company that owned Botafogo, and still does, and Lyon in France, one of the biggest clubs in France, and still does, and RWD Molenbeek, which is in Belgium. And they used to own Crystal Palace, but John Textor sold his shares in Crystal Palace to Woody Johnson, who owns the New York Jets. And that money was not exactly going to go back into the company. Why, you ask? Because John Textor, as the owner of Eagle Football Holdings, had to borrow more than 400 million euro to buy Lyon in France in 2022. So he borrowed a whole lot of money to get that. And there were all kinds of different payment and repayment and penalties and all these things. Well, Ares got a little tired of waiting. Crystal Palace got sold. Ares pocketed pretty much that entire money. So, and that only dented what he owes Ares for that initial loan. You also have issues between Botafogo and Lyon. We'll get to that in a minute. This is a really complicated thing now, because with the administration that Eagle Football Holdings is now under, Cork Gully has been appointed the administrator of Eagle Football Holdings, Bidco. That happened on March 27th. Ares management, who is owed money from John Textor and Eagle Football, Ares declared events of default for that payment that wasn't ever happening. I think it's around 250 million euro is what's been reported that he still owes Ares. Eagle Football reported a net loss of 200 million euro for the year that ended June 30, 2025. So that's not really, there's not going to be money coming to Ares from Eagle Football. They're not in a good position. On April 4th, so about a week after Cork Gully was appointed administrator, Botafogo, which is owned by Eagle Football, filed suit against Olympique Lyon, which is also owned by Eagle Football, seeking recovery of over 125 million euro in allegedly diverted funds, and this is reportedly prize money that Botafogo won for winning the Copa Libertadores that Thiago Almada helped them do, and the Brazilian league title, which Thiago Almada also helped them do. Unpaid transfer fees, the like. So Botafogo sees what's coming. John Textor still has control at Botafogo because of Brazilian law and injunctions in the Brazilian courts. So now he is trying, basically from the Brazilian branch of his multi-club ownership situation, he is basically suing the company that he started to have multiple clubs under their wing, and he's suing one of the clubs under it that he used to run, but now he doesn't because he ran it so badly that they were going to get relegated on financial irregularities. Yeah, it's all a mess. Let's see if we can make a little more sense of this. So this John Textor, when he started all this process, he talked about revolutionizing the game, revolutionizing multi-club ownership, doing things differently, doing things the right way, all of those things. Well, no, what he did is he tried to build a multi-club model based on borrowed money. He tried to manage all of it from a distance. It was all held together by assumptions rather than actual financial discipline. Way past all the warnings of this. Now this is the wreckage of it. So when Cork Gully walked into Eagle Football Holdings on March 27th, they're basically the new president, CEO, secretary, treasurer, everything. So they've got complete control. This isn't a warning. This is them walking in the door. Now, John Textor is trying to find some kind of legal fight here, and he is arguing that the default for his payments to Ares was triggered illegally, which doesn't make any sense because he actually hasn't been paying them back. So I don't know. He also tried to file all kinds of appeals about what he owed Atlanta United, and reportedly there was even something about the structure of Major League Soccer, and that was going to be his out for not paying for a transfer. And yeah, he's trying and failing. So all that's going to go to court and it'll get sorted out. Ares calls Textor's claims misleading. They are. So now the clubs, Lyon, Botafogo, Molenbeek, their fans, their staff, their futures, the people who play there, the people who work there, the people who coach there, they're all caught in the middle of this. This is John Textor losing control of what he built. Now, I mentioned that Botafogo lawsuit. It's crazy to have one club in a multi-club ownership structure suing another club, but that's where we are with this. Not really the model for success. It's all turned into like cross club damage at this point. Now, Lyon is the funny one here because Lyon was the one that was in the worst shape a year ago at this time. Lyon was supposed to be relegated to the second division in France at this time last year. Remember, Thiago Almada went on loan to Lyon in the first half of 2025, the second half of that year, that season. And he went on loan from Botafogo. And the reason why he went to Botafogo in the first place is Lyon didn't have any money. Lyon could not buy Thiago Almada from Atlanta United. So it went through Botafogo. So the idea that Botafogo is owed money by Lyon is not necessarily incorrect. That's always been the talking points out of Brazil, is that it was Botafogo that was propping up Lyon. And I think that's a valid argument. On the French media side, they, of course, would never guess that a Brazilian club would be more successful in the financials than a French club. But I'm not so sure that's the case. So you got to remember, again, John Textor paid a whole lot of money, borrowed a whole bunch of money to buy Lyon. Now he's lost control of that. He lost control when they were going to be relegated. Michel Kang, who owns the Washington Spirit and has a whole lot of money and has a whole lot of investments, she was installed as the president. She is running Lyon, so nothing's going to change right now with Cork Gully in that position because it looks like some combination of Ares and Michel Kang are going to end up owning Lyon. They're going to be the ones that come out of this in the best spot. Because basically, Ares and Michel Kang are going to get Lyon for pennies on the dollar. And it's Botafogo that is in the real challenging spot here. I don't think Lyon has anything to worry about. I think they're going to be owned by, again, some combination of Ares management and Michel Kang. They'll be fine. And they're having a good season. They could be in the Champions League next year. But DeFogo is the other part that's scary. I mean, there were reports out of Brazil today that the legal things you have to do when a company is going bankrupt and you're seeking buyers, those were posted in Brazilian newspapers today by Court Gully. So people are freaking out on the Botafogo side. You also have Botafogo internal disputes, and the way, again, a Brazilian club is structured is kind of awkward and different, where you have somebody like John Textor who still has control because basically his name is on the ownership certificate as opposed to Eagle Football. Aries, as a creditor of Eagle Football, can't get past that in Brazil like they have in France. So it's very complicated as to how that's all going to get sorted out. Eagle Football, run by Court Gully, is trying to sell whatever they own in Botafogo. I'm not sure if it's 75% or 85%, 90%. I'm not sure where the number falls, because there is a basically like a social club aspect of it, almost like a membership component to it that has a ownership stake in Botafogo. So from the Atlanta United side, they're going to get paid by somebody eventually. Otherwise, Botafogo is not going to be able to register players. They will go back on a transfer ban. Whoever is going to pay them, I do not know. Whatever agreement that was made back in February, I believe, whatever agreement was made, I would assume had some pretty severe financial penalties for not paying. So they should get more money on this deal than they were going to get originally. And I don't know what other caveats there were to it, because this, where things are right now, you could see it coming to a degree. Maybe it's a little more extreme and a little quicker, and maybe there's a few more complications to it. But you could see these things coming, and Atlanta United has some pretty smart people in that front office on the legal side. I'm sure there were a lot of protections for Atlanta United in that agreement about the Thiago Almada transfer payment that didn't happen initially. I'm fascinated to see where this goes. I really feel for Botafogo fans. Again, Leon's going to be fine. I really feel for the Brazilian fans in the side of it, because Botafogo had a epic, historic season in 2024. And now it's obvious that it was not built for success. That season, probably all of the money that went into that season and all that success, again, winning a Copa Libertadores, winning the Brazilian title, first time they won the Copa Libertadores, first time they'd won the Brazilian title in a long time. Winning that could in some ways hasten the club disappearing, or at a minimum being bought by somebody else who probably isn't going to be able to invest at the level that they did in 2024. I mean, you've got potential bankruptcy here. You've got all kinds of different scary scenarios for both the Fogo fans. And I hate it for them, because they have been very interested in what's going on, especially when it related to the Atlanta United side of things. They've been great fans of that club. That's one of the historic big clubs in Brazil that I don't think Eagle Football really, as it's currently being run with Aries and Michel Kang involved, I don't think they really care about Botafogo. So they're going to keep Lyon. Lyon's going to be fine. Who knows what happens with the Belgian club Molenbeek, but I think Botafogo is going to be left twisting in the wind because of some of the complications of the Brazilian legal situation and all that. But also, I just don't think they really care. And Botafogo is the one who's probably going to pay the price for all of John Textor's foolish financial planning. Unfortunately, it's going to be the fans in Brazil that pay the price there. We'll see when Atlanta United gets all of their money. You know it's coming at some point. We'll keep you posted on all of it. But John Textor, I'm sure, will have crazy things to say before we come back next week for another Atlanta Soccer Tonight. I'm sure he'll have some crazy lawsuits to file, and probably not accomplish much of anything except create more chaos. So when we come back, we'll reset. We'll try to get away from the chaos for a minute. We'll talk Atlanta United and Chattanooga. We will talk about a big announcement today out of Miami when it comes to Inter Miami, and we'll talk about the CONCACAF Champions Cup. All that's coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
Takes a shot, runs into the box, shot, score!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Hour number two, Atlanta Soccer Tonight. I'm Jason Longshore. Thanks for listening on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app or on the Off the Woodwork podcast. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you get your podcasts. All of our soccer content from 92.9 The Game is there. It's officially match day as Atlanta United will head up I-75 to Chattanooga, the scenic city, to face Chattanooga FC at Finley Stadium. I was about to say tomorrow. Today at 7:30. Kickoff is going to be right about 7:33, I think, for MLS matches on Apple TV. It's a 10 minutes after the announced time kick. I think for Open Cup, it's a 3 minute. So I'm assuming 7:33. Don't hold me to it. Pre-game coverage, I can tell you, will start at 6:30 on 92.9 The Game with Abe Gordon and Madison Cruz tomorrow. You can listen on the Odyssey app as well. So let's get ready for this game with Atlanta and Chattanooga. We'll talk about some other things in the domestic scene as well. Tata Martino spoke to the media on Monday. He was intentionally vague about who is available after the Chicago match. He did talk about a number of different injury issues. The availability report came out about 6 hours ago or so. Steven Alzate is listed as questionable with an adductor injury. Steven Gregerson, wisdom teeth is the injury. I believe he's having at least some of them removed. He is listed as questionable. Latte Lott, leg questionable. Tata Martino talked about it. He said he has a gash that needed stitches that happened in the Chicago match. Sabalob Janidze, also listed with a leg injury, questionable. Tata talked about that one in detail. Felt like it should have been a red card challenge from Mbahazi in late in the second half of that game. We didn't get a good look at it on a replay. I don't think there was a replay on the Apple broadcast. Looking back at it on my own, it does look like Mbahazi goes in straight leg, potentially studs up. Martino talked about him arriving late after the ball was gone. Tata was very frustrated. He also did laugh about saying that maybe he wouldn't be as frustrated or talking about referee decisions if the team was finding results. At least he wouldn't be quite as angry about it. But there's been a few. Steven Gregerson was tripped on a set piece, on a corner. Blatantly tripped. Goes down. It's kind of as he's making a run to the back post. Feet get tangled up or somebody just reaches out and trips him. He goes down. It's not a dive. I don't think it was even looked at by the video assistant referee. I went nuts about it in the Columbus game. The car wreck that happened inside the 18 where Max Arston shoved Alzate into Gregerson and then he went into Latte Lott and they all ended up on the ground on a set piece. And that was looked at, but not sent down for a review. So three different issues. Tata Martino talked about how in MLS, the clubs get a chance to basically submit questions, submit reports, submit complaints, and they have submitted ones about all three of those, and they have not heard anything back from the league, and he was very frustrated about that. So with the possibility of no Alzate, Gregerson, Latte Lott, Saba. Maranchuk is not listed here. He was out, and it was unexpected, in Chicago. Maranchuk trained on Thursday, spoke to the media on Thursday, was not in the game day roster on Saturday. And Chris Henderson told us, and also we got more information after the match, that it was discomfort that he felt on Friday night. They wanted to wait until Saturday to try to make a decision, and it was a very late decision for Alexei Maranchuk to not start in that match. He is not listed as questionable for this one tomorrow, today. I gotta remember we're past midnight at this point. I would imagine that he'd be available off the bench. I'd be a little surprised if he started, but this is a big game for Atlanta United. You need to get some momentum going. I do not expect Alzate, if you're dealing with a groin issue that came up in that game on Saturday, I do not imagine he will be available to play on Wednesday. Gregerson, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly when he was having the dental issue take place, so I don't know what his availability would be. Again, he's listed as questionable officially. Latte Lott needed stitches for a gash in his leg. I don't think that's going to be gone after it happened on Saturday. I don't know when he got the stitches, but I don't think that's going to be done and gone by the time you get to Wednesday. I'd be surprised. Saba was unable to put any weight on his right leg after the tackle. He has been able to put weight on it since. I saw it as we arrived back in Atlanta, but I can't imagine that he's going to be ready to go that quick. So maybe your thought could have been to rotate a little bit more. I don't know what you're going to end up doing here when you get into this match. I mean, you look at it. One, you got to think about 90 minutes plus possibly 30 more if it goes to extra time, plus possibly penalties. Chattanooga has been really good as of late. 5 straight unbeaten in all competitions. They went unbeaten against Atlanta United 2 last season. Take that for what it is. Back-to-back wins and playoff stakes kind of situations late in the season. There could be some players who played on the Atlanta United 2 side in this match. Could be. I'm not expecting very many. I think the first goal is everything. Richard Dixon, the manager for Chattanooga FC, Tate Robertson, they talked about after the Orlando City B win over the weekend for Chattanooga, they talked about how important it is. If Chattanooga scores first, the stadium, which will be a very big crowd, I don't know what the number will be, but it'll be a very big crowd, it's going to erupt. Then Atlanta are playing again away from home in a competitive match with the crowd going crazy against a team who's got absolutely nothing to lose. Then you start getting into psychological warfare in this thing. Atlanta has only scored first once, and they won that match. You've got to find a way to get the first goal. It's a knockout game on the road. You have to find a way to get the first goal. It is the entire context of the match, whoever gets the first goal. Another thing to keep in mind, Alex McGrath and Damian Barker-John. Barker-John comes into this after 2 goals on the weekend. He can cut inside very quick, both feet. I think when you look at McGrath, you're talking about more of a wily veteran in the midfield. He's got 4 goals from his midfield role this season. You've got to make sure he is accounted for at all times. And you've got to be careful about Barker-John cutting inside. It's going to be a tough one for Atlanta United. They will be on the road at Findlay Stadium to play Chattanooga FC tomorrow, round of 32 of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Let's stay in MLS. Big news today, Javier Mascherano. Nobody saw this coming. He won an MLS title last year in his first year as a head coach at the club level. 4 months later, he's gone, citing personal reasons. Communicated his decision to the club following Saturday's 2-2 draw against the Red Bulls. Michel Giannone of the Apple broadcast on the Spanish side said that from his sources, no one at the club saw this coming. Nobody expected it. Guillermo Hoyos has been named the interim, somebody who's very close to Lionel Messi. He's been involved on the academy side of things with Inter Miami. The Herons, they're 3-1-3. They're 3rd in the East. They were knocked out of CONCACAF in the round of 16 by Nashville, who is scoreless right now with Club America in Mexico City. They've had their moments, Nashville. They've also maybe started to tire here at the end of the half. It's the 43rd minute and the game is getting absolutely chaotic at the Estadio Azteca. But let's go back to Mascherano. They haven't won yet at their new stadium. Literally, it's called New Stadium NU. Mascherano replaced Tata Martino. He left after 18 months in Miami, and it was a personal issue that he left for. And from everything that I know from people who would have no reason to say otherwise, that was absolutely the reason why Tata Martino left. I'm seeing speculation and seeing reporting. I don't know if I'd call it reporting. I'm seeing people talking and assuming and speculating and pontificating about why Tata Martino left. And from what I know, again, from people, and this was well before this happened with Javier Mascherano, that was absolutely the reason. That was absolutely the reason from everything that I have been told and everything that I have heard from multiple people. So, Miami now, though, you moved on from Tata Martino, you hired Javier Mascherano, you won a league title. Now you've got to figure out what you're going to do next. It's a World Cup year. There will be managers available at the end of the World Cup that will be potentially some big names. What is Miami going to do? I don't think they're going to rush into this. I think you will get through the World Cup and figure out what you're going to do. Miami's been successful. I think you can look at it and say, well, they're on their third coach in 2 years, blah, blah, blah. No, they won a league title. They have won things. They have been a huge club in this league and in this hemisphere. Managers don't stick around at places very long anymore. I'm really curious. One, I hope everything is okay with Javier Mascherano. I've spoken about it before. I feel like he has been unfairly criticized at times in the media. The man won MLS Cup last year. I think he did some good things tactically. Was he perfect? No. No manager is. Did he do enough to win? Yes. Did he find the right combinations to win? Yes. I think there are some people with axes to grind that have been grinding them a lot and have been very unfair to Mascherano. I hope everything's okay with him. He was a player that I respected a ton and just a person in the game that I've respected a ton. And I thought what he did in Miami in his first year as a club manager, winning a league title, that is incredibly impressive. There are a very small number of managers who can say that. Nashville are leading the East. They're 5-1-1. They've looked like the class of the conference so far. Chicago's the only team to beat them. They are 4-1-2. They have been one of the most consistent teams in the league. Only 5 goals allowed all season. They've been very good defensively. Atlanta, the math is not catastrophic. The urgency is legit, though. Every point dropped now, you got to find a way to make it up later. And later is coming pretty fast. Again, with a league match this weekend hosting Nashville, who will be coming back from Mexico. But Nashville's been really good this season. You host them on Saturday. Then you host New England in the midweek next week. Then you go to Toronto the following weekend. Later is about to smack you in the face. We're going to find out if Atlanta United can take that punch and deliver a few of their own. Got to score some goals. They've got to score some goals. That is the biggest issue. You've got to score first. You got to score first in Chattanooga. You got to score first against Nashville. You've got to score first more consistently this season. But coming up next, it's What's on Tap. We always use this as a forward-looking segment, a looking ahead kind of segment. Sometimes it's about a game coming up. Tonight, it's going to be about what's coming up for U.S. soccer. Matt Crocker, the technical director for the U.S. Soccer Federation, resigned today, 59 days before the World Cup starts. Why? What does it mean? We'll figure it all out on the other side of the break on Atlanta Soccer tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. This segment has started to take on a little bit of a world of its own. It's What's on Tap. It's brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26. I like to use the segment as a way to look ahead. Looking ahead can take on a lot of different ways. It can literally be about something like Atlanta United in Chattanooga later today, kicking off at 7:33 this evening. Coming up really quickly. I got to get to Chattanooga tomorrow. That's a whole nother part of all of this. But we already talked about that. It could be looking ahead to what's coming up in Champions League tomorrow. Arsenal hosting Sporting, leading 1-0. Bayern Munich hosting Real Madrid, leading 2-1. We already talked about that. I think the home teams are going to win tomorrow. I think they're both going to advance to the semifinals. Could be about other things, but it's going to be about something that popped up this morning, completely and utterly unexpected. So let's start with the simple part of this. Matt Crocker, he resigned as the sporting director of the U.S. Soccer Federation today, 59 days before the U.S. men play their first World Cup match, to take a job of a similar nature with the Saudi Arabian Football Federation. Now, U.S. Soccer says they're operationally prepared and that Pochettino and his staff have full control of the preparation, which is absolutely true. The operational machine does keep running, but this isn't just an operational story. I think what Alexi Lalas said on Fox is accurate here. So, sporting director, generally like a general manager. Now, for a national team, that's a different role than it is at a club team or, you know, in another sport. But how would you feel if before the World Series, the GM of a team going into it decided, no, I'm going to go ahead and take a job somewhere else. And I'm going to leave now, by the way. I'm not going to leave at the end of the World Series, at the end of the season. I'm going to leave now. See ya. It's kind of weird, and I don't know why yet, but I'm very frustrated with Matt Crocker for doing this. This is somebody who was hired in April of 2023 from Southampton in England. He oversaw the rehiring of Greg Berhalter in 2023, then the firing of Berhalter in July of 2024 after the U.S. men did not get out of the first round of the Copa America. Big thanks to a red card from Tim Weah here in Atlanta. He oversaw the hiring of Maurizio Pochettino in September of 2024. He made the recommendation to hire Emma Hayes, which has worked out very, very well. But he was brought here to not just see this team through to the World Cup, but to help set what is coming after. That was the whole point of hiring him. And he split to go to Saudi Arabia, which is not rated as highly, which does not have a better developmental system, which does not have a better domestic league, which does not develop more talent, which is not a better job. Probably a very lucrative job, but that's a different part of the conversation. If that's why he left, if that's the only reason he left, then, well, he's unserious. And if a big job opens, whether at the club level or with a different national team, he should not be considered. He walked out on a host country 59 days before the tournament for the bag. And I'm all about people getting the bag. No problem with that. But you do it the right way. You don't leave now. You couldn't say, hey, guys, can I finish at least this part of what I was brought here for? And then leave when we're eliminated? Can I say that? No. The bag decreases if I do that. I mean, what? There's not any benefit to him getting over there now, again, because all of their World Cup prep is already done. I mean, there's not going to be anything really for him to do at this point. It's kind of ceremonial, but it's extremely disrespectful to the people that paid him very, very well to come here and do this. And it's very upsetting to see another person come here and basically use soccer in this country for their own gain and not leave anything behind. Because I don't think outside of more investment in the U.S. youth national team programs, I don't think he's really done anything. And that's a problem. He was brought here with a lot of talk. And now you have to go back and look at the decision that got you to hiring him and question it. You can leave after a cycle. Walking out on the runway to a home World Cup makes this feel extremely wrong. All right, So now, the what's on tap portion of this. What does U.S. soccer do next? Short term, you just got a deal. You can't let this be a soap opera. You can't let this be a distraction. I mean, Mauricio Pochettino and his staff, the operations staff of the men's national team, let them work. They'll do their thing. Handle the public calendar professionally. If Cindy Parlow Cohn, the president of U.S. Soccer, or the CEO, JT Batson, have to get out and do a media availability and talk about it, do that. Let Pochettino and his staff work. But here's the short term of the what's on tap. There's a very good chance that Mauricio Pochettino is not coming back after the tournament is over. There are a lot of big club jobs open. He's been pretty forthright in saying that he wants to get back into the club game in Europe. I don't expect him to be the manager after the U.S. is eliminated from the World Cup. I think he'll leave and do it the right way, unlike Matt Crocker, but that's a whole nother topic. So you're going to have to hire a new manager, and you can't really prepare to hire a new manager right now. So you're going to have to deal with that immediately. That would have been Matt Crocker's job, but he left. So now somebody's going to have to figure that out. So that's one, because you're going to have to do that quickly, because you're going to have matches coming up in September. You're getting into CONCACAF Nations League. You're getting into Gold Cup. You're getting into, not too far down the road, World Cup qualifying for 2030, which the U.S. didn't have to do last time around. You've got a lot of stuff coming. You're not going to be able to sit without a manager for very long. Normally, your sporting director would handle that. Well, you don't have one. You got to go hire a sporting director as well. And I am crossing my fingers, and I am hoping, one, that U.S. soccer gets this hire right. Two, I am hoping that the vetting process leads you to somebody who actually believes in soccer in this country, rather than someone who is trying to use it for their own personal gain. The way this went down, I do not feel it is unfair to say that Matt Crocker used U.S. soccer for his personal gain far more than he believed in what it could be and worked to make it better. I don't think he really leaves anything behind here. So now what? What I hope is that U.S. soccer looks internally on this. If you need to look externally on the head coach of the men's national team or the head coach of the women's national team, as you did with Emma Hayes, fine with that. No problem. I want the best coach you can get. I think sporting director is a different conversation. This is a person who is overseeing the on-the-field stuff, who is overseeing the long-term, who is overseeing how do we put this program in a position to be successful and challenge for the World Cup in 2034. How do you do that? That's where this thing is going. And this is something that you need to make sure you get this hire right. This is a big deal. So you don't need to bring in somebody from the outside who doesn't know how U.S. soccer is structured, doesn't understand, yeah, the peculiarities of it at times with how youth soccer is structured in this country, how the professional game is still growing, how leagues are owned by different entities and all those sorts of things. You don't need to hire somebody who comes in and is like, yeah, this is kind of frustrating because it's, you know, it's kind of fractured and it's all over the place. It's kind of frustrating that it's like that. Well, he knew what it was when he came in the door, but he liked the paycheck that he got, so he took the job. Hire somebody who understands it. Hire somebody who has maybe experienced some of it. And hire somebody who has ideas about how to make it better. Don't hire the next resume. Hire somebody who actually wants to do the job and is going to stick with it. That is such an important factor of this for U.S. soccer. It is a massive hire, because it will affect not just the men's program, but the women's program. It will affect the women as they build to a 2027 World Cup that they have to qualify for later this year. It will affect the U.S. women's national team as they prepare for hosting a World Cup in 2031. This is a really big hire. It's extremely frustrating that somebody who was heavily involved in building this men's national team under its current iteration under Maurizio Pochettino is walking out on them 59 days before hosting a World Cup for a bag. I mean, that's the only real thing I can come up with. If there's more to it, maybe we'll find out over time, but I'm fairly confident in feeling like, yeah, he went for the money and he walked out the way that he did. I wonder if he showed his face when he walked out. I wonder if he sent an email, maybe a text. I'm curious. It's just really frustrating. It's upsetting. It's disrespectful. It's going to create questions. It's going to create distractions potentially. I think Maurizio Pochettino can manage that. I'm not too worried about him in that situation. Hopefully it doesn't create other distractions for U.S. soccer. What has to come next? What's on tap now for U.S. soccer? You got to get this next hire right. And you got to get the next men's national team hire right, because I'm assuming that's going to be something you're going to have to hire for probably as soon as August. You've got a lot coming up. As we've said many times when we talk about 2026, yeah, this is a huge deal this summer. It's going to be a big deal for everybody involved in the game. The game is going to be in a better place when we're through the summer. But that's the point. There's still a whole lot more to come. The women's team, like we've talked about, has a lot coming up. But the men's team, the continued growth, there's so much to come. This is just the start of stuff. So now you got to hire somebody who's actually going to see it through. Good luck, Cindy Parlow-Cohn. Good luck, JT Batson. Good luck, U.S. soccer. Please get somebody who is emotionally invested in soccer in this country for this job rather than somebody who is using it for personal gain. Coming up next, y'all know how we end the show by now. A little bit of structure, the 3-4-3, three local stories, four headlines from all over the world, and three things that make me smile. Coming up next on AST on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's time to wrap up tonight's show with the 3-4-3.
3-4-3.
Three local stories, four headlines from around the world, and three things that made you smile about the game.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. Final segment, Atlanta Soccer Tonight. I'm Jason Longshore. You're listening to 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. This is an interesting one. The 3-4-3, three local stories, four headlines, and three things that make me smile about this game. What's interesting, and I did not have it in the headlines, is Nashville is leading 1-0 in the second half at the Estadio Azteca against Club America in CONCACAF Champions Cup. LAFC took care of their business earlier tonight in Puebla, beating Cruz Azul. They advance to the semifinals. Nashville right now is leading Las Aguilas, one of the most successful teams in CONCACAF history, in their home stadium in Mexico City, 1-0, scoreless after the first leg at Geodis Park. You can watch that on 2DayNA on FS1 while we finish up AST. But let's start on the local side in the 3-4-3. Atlanta United 2, big win for them on the road in Fort Lauderdale, beating Inter Miami 2 on Friday, 2-0, outshooting the Junior Herons 23-6. Goals came from Arif Kovac in the 15th minute, and then he assisted on Cameron Dunbar's goal in the 53rd. James Donaldson made his first professional appearance, first professional start, first professional clean sheet. 17 years and 21 days old. Donaldson is the youngest goalkeeper to earn a clean sheet in Atlanta United 2 history. Kovac and Ignacio Suarez Corey, they made their first career starts for Atlanta United 2. Kovac, his first goal of the season, same for Dunbar. The Twos will be on the road on Saturday, traveling to Bridgeview to face Chicago Fire 2, 4 o'clock start, and you'll be able to hear that on the SDH network. You can listen at soccerdownhere.net/listen. All right, on the local side, it's the last week of the regular season in Georgia high school soccer. Let's take a look around the state. Our second story on the local side will be boys high school all-state rankings, Johns Creek. They won tonight, beating back-to-back state champions River Ridge 3-0. They are number one in the state. I think they backed that up with a big win tonight. All classifications, Johns Creek number one, Lambert number two, Dalton number three. They drew with Notre Dame of Tennessee earlier today. Johnson of Gainesville number four, Carrollton five, Clark Central six, Whitfield Academy seven, St. Pius eight, Meadow Creek nine, Northwest Whitfield 10. Our third story on the local side is the girls all-state rankings through week nine. Marist, your top team in the state, followed by Walton, then West Forsyth. Riverwood, a historic season for them. They are fourth. Northgate, fifth. Brookwood, sixth. Wesleyan, seventh. Oconee County, eight. Blessed Trinity, nine. And Pike County, 10. Last week of the regular season, last day of the regular season is Thursday. On the SDH Network, we will be in two different places. Drew Dickinson will be on the call down in Fayette County as McIntosh will travel to face Stars Mill. That's always a huge rivalry, always a great cause as well, the battle for the troops. They raise money for veterans organizations in the area. Go check that out if you're on the south side of town. If you are on the northeast side of things, then you'll want to make a trip to City Park in Gainesville. Johnson at Gainesville, always a huge match. Myself and Madison Cruz will be there for that one. I'll have the girls' game kicking off at about 5:30. Maddie will have the boys' game kicking off at about 7:30. All right, four headlines from all over the world. Number one, a headline because it is the first loss in 11 matches for the U.S. Women's National Team. Losing 1-0 to Japan, Micah Hamano with the goal, ends that 10-game winning streak that included a 2-1 win over Japan on Saturday. A lot of young players, a lot of rotation, a lot of lessons you can take out of this. It's a long-term positive. The U.S. just wasn't good enough in the final third, especially tonight. First loss since October of 2025. That was a 2-1 loss to Portugal. First time the U.S. has been shut out in 42 games. Japan's last win against the U.S. was in the She Believes Cup final in 2025. Hamano fooled Lily Reel and then scored with her left foot over Fallantellis Joyce's outstretched hand in the 27th minute. Sophia Wilson rested. Trinity Rodman rested. They came in as substitutes in the 65th minute alongside Tierna Davidson. Davidson had not played for the U.S. since February of 2025. She tore her ACL in a match with Gotham FC last March. Number two on the headlines, Andoni Areola is leaving Bournemouth at the end of the season, and the managerial carousel worldwide could get started a little bit early. I thought it was going to wait until after the World Cup, but Areola announcing that he is going to leave at the end of his contract, at the end of the season, said it was the right moment to step away. It gets interesting because, one, Bournemouth now has to go out into the market and find somebody. Ipswich Town's Kieran McKenna is going to be probably high on that list, according to The Athletic. Marco Ross, former Borussia Dortmund and RB Leipzig coach. Frank Lampard, also potentially of interest. He's done very well with Coventry City. But Iraola, reported by The Athletic back at the beginning of the month, he is one of Crystal Palace's targets, but I think he could be looking at something bigger than that. Athletic Club in Spain, they could be looking at Areola after Ernesto Valverde announced his upcoming exit. Maybe possible, maybe not. Areola was previously targeted by Tottenham Hotspur, but they hired Roberto De Zerbi. Could Areola be a possibility for a Manchester United? Could he be a possibility for a Real Madrid? Maybe those are a little bit too far for him, but he is one of the up-and-coming managers, and he has been looked at by clubs of that ilk before. So I'm really curious to see where Andoni Areola ends up. Number three on the headlines, let's go to Mexico. The national team, El Tri, they will announce which Liga MX players will join the World Cup training camp next week. That was announced today. What that's going to do is that's going to allow domestic league players to rest for a few days, And then they're going to report for the camp beginning May 6th. The Clausura tournament, the current season in Mexico, it ends the regular season April 27th. The playoffs will begin the following week, and it will take place without these players who have been called up for the World Cup. They will go into an early pre-World Cup training camp to get ready. That's a bold move from the Mexican Federation. That's a bold move that the clubs allowed it, because the clubs really have a lot of say in Mexico. But they did. Javier Aguirre, he's the manager for El Tri. He struggled to get kind of a core group because he's dealt with a ton of injuries. 12 players, six of which helped the team win the CONCACAF Nations League and the Gold Cup last year. They missed the last match due to injury. Mexico will play its final warm-up match ahead of the tournament against Serbia. That's going to be on June 4th in Toluca. Then they will host South Africa a week later at the Estadio Azteca in the tournament opener. June 11th, 3 o'clock. Stay tuned to 92.9 The Game and Atlanta Soccer Tonight, because we will have a place you can join us for that match very, very soon. It's going to be a fun summer. Just go ahead and make sure you have a lot of time off. That's all I will say. All right. Number four on the headlines. Let's go back across the pond. England, 1-0 win today over Spain in World Cup qualifying for the Women's World Cup for UEFA. Now, remember, the Women's World Cup next summer in Brazil. This was a big win for England. They take control of the group over Spain. This was a repeat of the Euro 2025 final, a repeat of the 2023 World Cup final. Spain won that one. England won the Euro. And they both got drawn into the same group in UEFA World Cup qualifying. It's a big start for Serena Wiegmann. Laura Hemp with the goal early for England to get that win. All right, three things that make me smile. We'll stay on the women's side for number one. She came in the 65th minute tonight. Sophia Wilson back in the U.S. women's national team picture after maternity leave. Such a key player for this team. You've got double espresso back. Mallory Swanson, not back yet. She is also out on maternity leave. Swanson was, I think, in 2024, the best player in the world. Maybe going into 2025 when she went out on maternity leave. I mean, she, after coming back from injury, after missing the World Cup in 2023, as good as anybody, anywhere. Sophia Wilson has been same, as good as anybody in terms of a straight-up attacker. I think Swanson gives you a little bit of both. Trinity Rodman gives you, I think, some creativity, some unpredictability. Triple espresso is going to be very, very important for the U.S. women's national team as they go and try to reclaim the World Cup. It's been a minute. It's been a minute for them. They missed out last time. That was Spain who won it. Going back to 2019, 2015, when Jill Ellis won back-to-back, they have won the Olympic gold medal in 2024. But can the U.S. women go to Brazil and be the favorite? I don't know if they are unless you get all of Triple Espresso back. I think this is a young group. We're still figuring this team out. They are going to have to go through qualifying. That'll happen in the fall. They should be fine when it comes to CONCACAF. But Sophia Wilson will be a big part of it. Tierna Davidson will be a big part of it as well. It's great to see her back tonight. This is an important window against Japan. Game three against Japan coming up this weekend is going to be very interesting for the U.S. women's national team. Number two on things that make me smile, the just absolute chaos of Atleti and Barcelona today. Anytime you've got Atleti and Barcelona playing, you might have to use one of those vacation days. I told you to save them for the World Cup. There's going to be no more Atleti Barcelona games this season, so you're okay. But next year, the La Liga schedule comes out. Mark down those games. If they get drawn against each other in the Copa del Rey, mark down those games. They end up against each other in the Champions League, mark down those games. The Spanish Supercopa, mark down those games. It's always crazy. Always. This was no exception. These are two teams that you saw have a 4-3 over two legs in the Copa del Rey. You saw Atleti win the home leg 4-0 and then lose the away leg in Barcelona 3-0, but they did enough to hold on. in this one, Atleti went to Barca and won 2-0 last week. And then in this match, they conceded twice. They lost their advantage and then picked themselves up and got the goal from Ademola Lookman that they needed. This game had goals. This game had controversy. This game had pre-match drama. This game had blood, literally, from two different players. Everything. Everything you could possibly want in a huge Champions League day. Great match between Atleti and Barcelona. Go back and check out all the highlights of that. And number three on things that make me smile, the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. One that it honors somebody who is so vital to soccer in this country, being where it is now in Lamar Hunt. Invested in the North American Soccer League, invested in Major League Soccer, invested in soccer in this country when people didn't really want to invest in soccer in this country. His name being on this tournament is important. This tournament is important. It gives every team in the country an opportunity to win a national title. Yeah. Are your local teams going to compete with the MLS teams? Probably not. But the opportunity is there. Cup sets happen. Magic happens. You've got games happening in different cities all over the country tonight and tomorrow. You've got games, or yesterday and today, to be fair. You've got games happening with teams from different divisions. You've got weird game states. Weird things happen in these games. And there's always that possibility that one night becomes part of a club's history, their forever story. For Atlanta and Chattanooga tomorrow, you've got a 41-year-old FA Cup winner in goal for the home team. You'll have a raucous crowd at Finley Stadium. Atlanta United's got to walk into that and get a result. You'll have a kid on loan facing his parent club the day after his birthday. Chattanooga FC, Atlanta United, tomorrow night. 6:30 is your pregame on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Abe Gordon, Madison Cruz, they will get you ready. Myself and Mike Conti, we will have the call for you starting just after 7:30. Full-time report will follow all of it. Maybe it's 90 minutes. Maybe it's 120. Maybe you need a penalty shootout. We will be there for every bit of it tomorrow from Chattanooga. Thank you for spending your Tuesday night and Wednesday morning with me. Looking forward to this one tomorrow. Adios, everybody.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.